Here's another listener essay.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Listener essay.
Listener essay. Listener essay.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and today's listener essay comes from Miriam and is titled My Response to Jonathan Haidt. Now, if you want to vote for this essay and give some private feedback to the author, visit our website. I'll give you the form letter pre-recorded detail message at the end of the episode today. But for now, take it away, Miriam.
Jonathan Haidt shares an animation of microscopic organisms to illustrate the dynamic of living things functioning as groups. He describes the fascinating eventuality where, sometime in deep prehistory, one organism swallowed another and together they began to function as a new organism, a superorganism. This superorganism becomes stronger than the sum of its parts, more robust and more adaptable. Humanity is much like a superorganism. As social creatures, we need each other and benefit greatly from each other. Groups provide interaction that produces more strategic and material resources beneficial for our individual survival. In a way, the individual is swallowed into a social group and then becomes one of many functioning organs of the whole creature, the group. This group distinguishes itself, Jonathan Haidt continues, with transcendence. Euphoria and ecstasy within the group coalesce the group members into a like mindset focused on a joint belief or cause. Imagine a hunting party spread out at important landmarks on a game trail, each playing a role in finding, separating, and then killing the hunted prey. They each contribute and for the time act in consonance as one, and they each benefit from the kill. Collaboration like this is found at virtually all levels of human society. It is in our institutions, in our traditions, in our genes. Babies are born with proportionally large heads and facial features that induce affectionate feelings in adults. They cry in ways that causes physiological distress, creating incentive for attending to their needs. Rites of passage like circumcision, quinceañeras, weddings, and funeral wakes attach meaning to different life stages and events, producing repeatable feelings of union with others and a sense of communal belonging. Participating in traditional events signals that you are in the group, and Mormonism has its own brand of validation. Imagine, in one moment, a new move-in to a Mormon ward can communicate their credentials. Hi, I'm Lehi Johansson. This is my wife, Jessica, and our kids, Joseph, Natalie, there's Taylor, this one's Mahanri, and Elizabeth is here. The males have white shirts and ties. The females have white tees and jumpers. Everyone is clean-shaven. Scriptures are found in home-sewn scripture satchels in their hands. This gesture occurs in a matter of seconds, but affects passage of these would-be strangers through the barrier. They are now on the other side. They are part of the ward, family members, to be congealed into predetermined roles in the superorganism of the group. Haidt goes over the boating race scenario, where individual members of each respective team may compete within their team. But one boat carrying an entire team works in concert to win the race against competing boats. The boat is a superorganism, members following commands, and captains issuing orders. Imagine the deep doctrine debates in high priest group, or Relief Society mothers comparing and judging each other based on their groomed children. Such in-group competitions differ drastically from debates and comparisons with outsiders, and especially differ when an apostate enters the scene. The same complaint from a believing, contributing member in the boat will be treated differently than from an open apostate who is outside the boat, for example. Speaking of apostates, first, more background from Haidt. Human beings form cohesive groups similar to superorganisms, yet they are not the most cohesive and are not as cohesive as bees. This is where, in my opinion, humanity surmounted a threshold of existence. Because people can leave their groups. They can leave their groups, then form other groups. Then the new group can compete against the original group, even absorb its members. Then another group might form from leavers, which competes, and so on. On a whole, this ability to break away mathematically improves our ability to adapt. Instead of being tied to one group and one type of cohesion, the superorganism groups can be variable and offer people more options, and more viable options improve adaptability. As a result, the entire human superorganism as a whole, global and dynamic, is more adaptable. Don't believe this superorganism mumbo-jumbo. Consider the people, pencil, the yellow-painted, iconic number 2 pencil with the aluminum band and eraser at the top. It literally takes hundreds of thousands of people, possibly millions, to make one pencil from scratch, to mine, find, and grow the raw resources, to build and power the ships, to transport those resources, to refine and mix those materials that eventually, after hundreds and hundreds of steps, these components are mechanically formed into a pencil. Go off the grid, even, and you will likely take something with you that is sophisticated and work-intensive as a pencil, be it a hammer, or seeds, or nails, or medicines. Try to reproduce and raise a family, and you will need such things to survive and continue in perpetuity. So, back to that cultural membrane, one more specific and tightly binding than capitalism and trade, the religions, and specifically Mormonism. Mormonism's membrane is belief, centered around the claims of Joseph Smith, the passage of central authority through his male successors, and the limited distribution of that authority to local male priesthood leaders. Remember the ward's new family, the Johansons? They walk into a ward of complete strangers. Consider the process by which they are to accept the new authority, the bishop, the man who has final priesthood authority over the ward and over their future participation in it.
Hi, I'm Bishop Jones. Nice to meet you.
Pause. Well, that's all. The Johnsons take his divine authority on faith. Lehi, Jessica, Joseph, Natalie, Taylor, Mahanri, and even little Elizabeth will all eventually pass through Bishop Jones' office to stand before him and be judged on their personal worthiness before God. Bishop Jones will decide if they pass. Lehi and Jessica are showing their children they can trust their bishop, and by extension, that they can trust all the males exercising priesthood roles in the ward. Inside the cultural Mormon membrane, there is a special protection, the feeling of being safe, because we believe the same, and we believe that we believe the best beliefs. It is a warm feeling, untainted by cynicism or fighting. The feeling is produced and reproduced by the signals of language, appearance, and practice. When others signify their loyalty, we know they are one of us. Especially when priesthood males signify their loyalty, other Mormons know they can be trusted. This authority is then used thoroughly, establishing the general path of a person's entire life, but also dictating small details like what we eat, what we wear under our clothes, how we have sex, and what we do on any given day of the week. Yet, in this membrane, the priesthood authority exists exclusively through the males. Half the population does not ever have the representation and ultimate authority of the church, be it on the ward, stake, or church-wide level, not even in the home. Thus, none of those with a final say can, from an experiential perspective, see, understand, or address basic problems of the human experience faced by a near majority of human beings. Except it feels good, so good and warm, because we believe what we believe, and we believe the best beliefs. And that the patriarchal order works the best of anything that works. And thus, even in people with the best intentions, there's an abundance of certainty in Mormon land. With certainty, it is very hard for doubts to encroach and disrupt the framework, that it is very hard for problems, especially systemic problems, to be addressed, understood, or even seen. This is compounded by the concentration of priesthood authority because it keeps the authorities in ignorance of experiential knowledge since it excludes half the members. This is further compounded because individual members are taught to trust priesthood authorities to the extreme on an intimate basis, making them more vulnerable to improprieties of leaders and making leaders more impervious to criticism. Thus, Mormons are working on a boat that is very good at promoting loyalty and trust in the group, and with that, many of the benefits associated with tightly supportive groups. Yet when things go wrong with the boat itself, you could say the loyalty is so tight that it takes a great deal to change the boat or fix it. I really enjoyed Jonathan Haidt's talk and how it helped me think about Mormon culture, of somewhat how it functions and how we functioned in it. Most of all, I like the idea of not merely transcending self from time to time and becoming part of something more, but of transcending culture for something more and better, and hopefully creating something better. There is something that makes Mormonism inevitably counterproductive to individual progress. It inhibits that thing that makes humans as adaptable as we are, because Mormonism inhibits group disloyalty. Is it a coincidence that Utah is called the Beehive State? Mormonism makes humans more cohesive than they should be or need to be for their own good. That is what is so untenable, and this is what ultimately damns the church. The genius of humans is that they can both collaborate in cohesive groups, but then also break away from groups to form competing alternatives, improving overall human adaptability. So, inasmuch as the church denies an individual their ultimate personal authority over their own lives, it denies them their selves. Stomp out this basic genius of the human condition, and you destroy collective and individual progress. My name is Rebecca, and unfortunately, I speak from experience. Also, fortunately, I also speak from experience. Most of my immediately family left the church earlier this year. A family of nine, Hubs and I met and married at BYU. Our first three were born in Provo when we lived at Y Mount Terrace. We've experienced the church in three U.S. states and three different countries and languages. Our children are aged from 6 to 18, and we are so, so glad we can start course correcting now. We have two LGBT children and two agnostic kids. Since the start of this year, they can openly acknowledge those parts of themselves, and their father and I can respond to the needs of all of our children in healthier, more rational, and compassionate ways. I am so happily mindful of the intuition I have and the brain I have that has led me to this place and helped me bring my family to this place. So glad to adapt and learn. Thanks, infants, for helping.
Thank you for the listener essay. We desire all to receive it. And if you want to vote for it, go to the website and vote for it and give the author some feedback. And then tune in again tomorrow, because we'll be doing this all over again with a brand new listener essay. I'll have all the long-winded fancy details as an Easter egg, so you can skip over it if you want, or listen to it if you want. It'll be there after Zoe says, "Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones."
That's how we roll.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew. Ryan.
Carol.
Keith.
Ashley.
And I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
consider supporting us on Patreon. For as little as $1 per episode, capped at whatever total amount you want to cap that at. I mean, where do you think the money is coming from to award prizes to the listener essays, huh? Pretty cool stuff we're doing on Infants on Thrones. Also,
give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Well, that was a great listener essay, wasn't it? Ready to go vote for it? Now, if you've heard this before and you're an old pro at voting for these essays, you can just skip over this part. Now, here's how this is going to work. As it stands right now, I have 14 listener essays, and that means that for the next 2 weeks, starting today, February 7th, ending on February 20th, you will be hearing one listener essay per day, at least for those of you who listen in real time once the episode is released. And FYI, some of these essays were submitted to us without a title, so I gave them a title myself. So if you think the title of the essay is stupid, well, that's probably my fault, because damn if I don't love me some stupid. But here's the really exciting part. One of these 14 essays will win $218 because it's 2018 now, and we like to be cute and stupid about things, but we're not able to award a $2,000 prize just yet, okay? Another essay will win $109, half of the 218, and I think I actually got the math right this time, I think. And a third will win $50, and you listeners get to choose who these winners will be, and you'll also be able to give private feedback to each author. So here's how that's going to happen. After you listen to the essay today, go to our website, infantsonthrones.com, find the post for the essay that you listen to, and be sure that you have the author's name and the essay title right so that your feedback goes to the right place. Click on the survey that's associated with that essay, and it's going to be there on the post. Fill out the survey and submit it, and then sit back and breathe in and breathe out and feel life's energy flow through you and bask in the warm feeling of knowing that you made a difference in the life of someone brave enough to submit a listener essay to Infants on Thrones. Now, when you fill out these surveys, you're going to be asked two things primarily. One, to rate the essay on a scale of 1 to 5. And then you'll also have the opportunity to write in some of your thoughts, some of your feedback for the author. It'll only take a few minutes, and then boom, you're done. Now, you can do this for every single essay, every single one of these 14 essays. You can vote, or you can put your feedback for each one of these 14 essays, but you can only vote once for each essay. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, voting will be open through the entire month of February, even though the essays will stop on the 20th. You'll still be able to vote for the last week or so of February. On March 1st, voting will be closed, and then the winners will be announced on Saturday, March 3rd. Now, some of you may be wondering, is there a deadline for submitting essays? Well, no, not really. Now, this contest with these 14 essays, that will end with the final essay being released on February 20th, but my hope is that as you listen to these essays, you will feel inspired to make one yourself and share your unique view of the world with the rest of our listening audience. So if you want to do that, submit it, and as soon as we get another 10 to 15 essays, we'll start another contest. How's that? Make sense? Pretty good deal, huh? And isn't that really how the world's supposed to work anyway? I mean, think of it like this. It could be kind of like if you were kneeling at an altar and you looked up and you saw this big mirror on the wall in front of you. And in that mirror, you could see not only your own reflection looking back at you, but you could see the reflection of the mirror on the wall behind you and the back of your head. And then in that reflection, you also saw another reflection of yourself, both front and back, stretching outward and onward, upward throughout all generations of time and throughout all eternity, like Rey in the new Star Wars movie, if Rey had like been at an altar and married herself. Can you marry yourself? What is that, Master Wedshin? I don't know, in some kind of a weird Mormon Jedi temple ceremony thing that distinguishes one type of nerd from other types of nerds. That's kind of what this essay contest is like. No, I don't know. Will it end? Can you submit essays forever and ever and be like Rey? I don't know. See, what did I tell you? I love me some stupid. So this is the deal. Infant Listener Essay Contest. Please participate and make this thing super special, because special isn't just a euphemism anymore, or something remarkable like that.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew, Ryan,
Carol,
Keith,
Ashley.
And I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as $1 per episode, capped at whatever total amount you want to cap that at. I mean, where do you think the money is coming from to award prizes to the listener essays, huh? Pretty cool stuff we're doing on Infants on Thrones. Also,
give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did.
Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.